reconvene the Fish and Wildlife Commission meeting, and we were on agenda item number 8, which is a briefing and public hearing, Hood Canal Chum Management Review. So, Lori, I will let you take it over. And there is public input on this item.
Do we have? I don't have any yet, but I think I can get it.
Okay.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and Commissioners. I'm Lori Peterson with the Fish Program. I'm the Puget Sound Fisheries Manager, and I'm here with Kurt Hughes, also from Fish Program, and he's going to start us off today, and then I'll take the second half of the presentation.
Thanks, Lori. Good afternoon, Chair Smith, Commissioners, Directors. Thanks for having us. I really appreciate the opportunity to provide a briefing on Puget Sound. Chum management in particular requested for an overview of our management activities in Hood Canal. Specific questions that we received in the blue sheet, there's basically three questions in there. How is Hood Canal chum run size evaluated and updated in season? In recent years, how and why has the methodology changed? And has the change in methodology negatively impacted the ability of WDFW to provide timely access for the All Citizens Fleet to harvest chum? Excuse me. So what we're talking about is this area here in green. Obviously, this is a graphic of Puget Sound, and the area in management of Hood Canal is there in green. So that's the focus for today's discussion. So a brief overview of the presentation. We're going to go through some of the policy guidance that we have as managers in crafting the preseason plan for the fishery and going through the fishery in season. Some of the basic characteristics of management objectives and the process. A bit more on the background and history that will be specific to the change in methodology. And then current in-season management process and some outcomes of the recent management actions taken under this new ISU methodology that we have. So our guidance from the commission, just to refamiliarize you guys with this, John presented on this in January, so it should be fairly fresh in your mind. But in general, a statewide directive to provide opportunity for harvesting healthy wild and hatchery stocks. In general, they're not exclusively by stock or by species set aside for sport or commercial users. However, more discrete direction when we get into sockeye chum and pink salmon. In regard to Puget Sound chum in particular, the majority of the harvest is identified and set aside for commercial fisheries. And then we also have an intent to minimize gear and other fishery conflicts. So higher level guidance, these three items actually are kind of our preseason marching orders, if you will, the things that we really look to and rely on in addition to the policy guidance from the RCW to conserve food, fish, resources in a manner that does not impair the resource and achieving our conservation objectives for all species and stocks, certainly to harvest the non-treaty share, and then to maintain the economic well-being and stability of the fishery. So chum management in Hood Canal is not exclusively done by the department. Obviously, we have managers, co-managers, in particular, the four tribes that we co-manage the resource with, Lower Elwha, Jamestown, Port Gamble, and Skokomish tribes. And then Point Treaty Council representing Jamestown and Port Gamble and the Northwest Indian Fish Commission staff representing all of the tribes in the Western Washington area. So our management objectives are fairly straightforward. On the natural production side of things, we have both odd and even year objectives. They're different because of capacities and influences of other species. And roughly speaking, about 40,000 escapement on an odd year and about 54,000 on an even year.
The graphic below that shows the deviation from the escapement goal. And given the fact that there's this difference in objective from odd to even, thought it might be easier to represent it as a percentage deviation. Blue bars identify that we've been above goal. Red bars identify we've been below goal. I think noteworthy is the recent 4 years under the 11 through 14 time frame, specifically the 12, 13, and 14 years are where we've operated under the current ISU. Hatchery production oftentimes comes up as a question of what's our objective for hatchery production within Hood Canal. Certainly it has in the last couple of months in various commercial fishery meetings that we've had, and so we wanted to make sure we had that at hand. About $25 million in WDFW managed facilities and another $3.2 million from the Skokomish tribe. So management objectives or the characteristics of managing chum in Hood Canal. Want to identify that black line there. That's the peak, or sorry, that's the rack count at each of the facilities averaged over a recent set of years, 2008 to 14. And what this is simply identifying is kind of our peak timing that is occurring in river at the facilities for hatchery origin fish. The green curve is representing the peak timing of live counts. These are natural fish staging on the spawning grounds or arriving on the spawning grounds. And so there is about a fairly similar characteristic for timing, but hatchery production is arriving a couple of weeks ahead of the natural production. And then where we're targeting our fishery is really in this week 43, 44 time frame for the peak of the commercial fishery in Hood Canal proper in Marine Area 12. Noteworthy, this little bump here on the front end of the run is the summer chum, and so that summer chum conservation period through about October 15. So we're not fishing until those stocks have cleared the system. So just to quickly, we identified our objectives or our ability to achieve spawner goals for wild production. Want to make sure that we're fishing pretty hard on this hatchery production, but we're still able to achieve our spawner goals. About 20,000 is our objective for egg take needs in Hood Canal. So we've been averaging achieving our egg take goals certainly since 2010. And then we've had a fair bit of surplus in recent years. We've been averaging about 32,000 chum surplus. So we certainly have not impaired the hatchery resource nor the wild resource there.
Next, I'll cover the steps and information requirements of the in-season management process itself for Hood Canal chum commercial fisheries. Well before the season even starts, which is in mid-October, back in the springtime, we generate pre-season forecasts of Hood Canal chum. We need the agreed treaty and non-treaty fishing schedules via the North of Falcon process. We calculate the number of harvestable chum expected from the preseason forecast. And in that calculation, we take into account the escapement target for hatchery fish in the system, as well as late time versus normal timed stocks. Then we divide that harvestable number into treaty and non-treaty shares, basically half and half. This information all contributes to our in-season weekly co-manager conference calls. We all have that, the co-managers that Kurt highlighted on a previous slide. And then technical staff from both the tribes and state work very hard to update the tribal and non-tribal weekly catch numbers by date, gear type, and area. We get these immediately in real time from buyers via our quick report system. The staff run our in-season update model with its cumulative catch per unit effort data from the non-tribal per seine fleet to predict run size. And I'll flag this pink box here because this is really where things have changed. In 2012, we had an agreed-to model, and we still have it, that I'll call the new model or the 2012 model, that we could agree to at the North of Falcon process way ahead of time. And it gave the co-managers comfort And we'll go into the history of how that model was developed. Also, feeding into these weekly co-manager conference calls, we assemble hatchery and natural escapement data to date, including sex ratio data. So the earlier part of the run will tend to be dominated by a higher proportion of males, the later part by a higher proportion of females. That can give an indication as to where we are in the run timing. And we incorporate any other in-season special observations. Continuing with our in-season management steps, we also calculate known and expected catches, high, average, and low levels by gear type at different expected run sizes. So we'll use the preseason run size and a couple other in-season update scenarios and project catches. We'll also project remaining shares at those catches for the different run size possibilities. And this one is a key step. The co-managers then discuss whether or not an update to the run size is warranted. Now, ideally, we do reach agreement. But as Commissioner Kehoe and many others in the room know, that can be difficult. So sometimes we cannot get there. Yet we work hard together to try our best. And eventually, we propose fishing schedules for the next week.
Excuse me. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Commissioner Carpenter?
Laurie, somewhere back in my memory bank, if I recall correctly, we have a very unique situation in Hood Canal where we have a public-private partnership on production. Are you going to talk about that, or is that do I remember correctly?
Yes, we do, and perhaps we can get into that in the discussion afterwards with
sure.
Commissioner
okay.
Kehoe.
We can talk at dinner tonight if you want.
Okay.
But we'll touch on that for sure as we look toward the future.
He offered dinner. That was good. So.
Yeah. All right. And then in these weekly calls, we do try to, again, propose the fishing schedules for tribal and non-tribal and schedule the next weekly conference call. This slide shows an example of a table from our weekly in-season report, and our stakeholders from the industry really appreciate these. Each week on a Friday, we send them out. And it contains our weekly catches for non-tribal, persane and gillnet, and the total. We have the preseason forecast up here, the non-treaty shares calculated from our latest in-season update of run size. So in 2015, for example, which is this report, we had in week 47 an update of 617,000. Which is almost 200,000 higher than the preseason forecast. So it really behooves our industry to have an in-season update model as opposed to fishing on the preseason forecast-based shares. And you can see throughout the weeks we document if we had an in-season update. The first 2 weeks we did not. By late October we did. And we actually reached share and then some by week 44 in 2015. So we were responsible co-managers took the high road and stopped fishing for weeks 45 and 46. The Skokomish tribe continued fishing even though they were at share, and by week 47 we did have an agreement for an updated run size. All parties believe that the run size was even higher than our model showed. We had sex ratio data and other data. And so we did go in for a little more time and ended up just catching another 2,300 fish. And we're slightly above the share. This is a very high-value fishery. We're getting about 70 cents a pound. Each fish, on average, is about 8.6 to 9 pounds. Our fleet alone in 2015, we estimate, achieved about a 1.5 million ex-vessel value. So those slides documented our current process with the current new in-season update model. But there's a long, colorful history, as Commissioner Kehoe and others know, in this process of Hood Canal Chum commercial fishery management. We've had agreements on in-season update models with the tribes, but the agreement has fallen apart in season as people compete in conflict over shares. Leading up to our 2012 point at which we did conduct a collaborative review of the models. Up to that point, there was just increasing uncertainty building, increasing conflict on the calls. We would have to agree to not agree, fish at the preseason forecast or at a lower in-season update than we thought the shares really should be. So in 2012, the co-managers together worked jointly on a model review process with the biometricians from the tribal side and the state side. Two time periods were assessed, an early period from October 15 to 31, an extended period from October 15 to November 7. We evaluated predictability of run size using purse-seine data from the all-citizen fleet. Those data showed the most predictability, the most power to really predict run size. We had a cumulative catch model for years 1981 to 2011 and also 1997 to 2011, and a cumulative catch per unit effort model. So this is total catch, total effort in terms of unique fish tickets for these same year ranges. So the winner was what we now have as our agreed to model, the cumulative catch per unit effort model for the dates of the early period, the 15th through the 31st of October. And this is a linear regression. It's just a cause-effect model where we plug in our cumulative catch per unit effort in the season, and it relates to estimating run size here on the vertical axis. As you can see, there's a tight fit. Here's some statistics. Won't go into that, but it's a strong predictive model. There was another evaluation of this model in 2014 between the co-manager technical staff. An additional 2 years of data were included in that model you saw on the previous slide. Those years were 2012 and 2013. And these additional data increased the predictive strength of the model, and the co-managers agreed to extend our agreement to use that particular model for 2015. And so that's where we ended up in North Falcon 2015. Assessing our performance and managing this fishery over time, we've got fishery year on the horizontal axis of this graph and run size on the vertical axis for years 2008 through 2014. And we've got a mean for 2008 to 2014 at the end here. The red bars are postseason actual reconstructed run size. The blue bars are the in-season update that we had that year, and the green bars are the preseason forecast run size. In general, in some of these years before the agreed-to new model in 2012, we had some variation between the in-season update and the postseason run size. In 2008, for example, we over-predicted the in-season run size, although postseason we have had trouble with tribes and their catch accounting. We've improved. We've been working with them on that, and in more recent years, you'll see more correspondence between the in-season update and the postseason run reconstruction. 2013 was a big year, just a lot of fish, over 1.4 million came back. This graph shows a proportional deviation from share for the all-citizen non-tribal fleet by year. We've got 2008 again through the most recent 2015. And this attempts to answer this question Commissioner Kehoe had about, has the all-citizen fleet been achieving their share? Prior to our new model agreement in 2012, we see larger swings in this pattern of the red means we did not achieve share, and the blue means we did achieve or went over our share. In 2008, actually, the fish just weren't showing up. So as you probably remember from the previous graph, the postseason run size was quite a bit lower than the in-season, and without the fish there in abundance, we in-season predicted a higher share than we actually got. In 2011, We couldn't get agreement with the tribes to increase the in-season run size update, and as a result, we had just a very low share that really under-predicted what we should have had, so we went over. We've had less fluctuation since 2012 with the agreed model. A couple years here where it's pretty much a bullseye. We've got just little underachieving share. 2014 and 15, little over, although I can speak to 2015. We believe the run size was actually higher, and we went over, as you saw on our previous slide, by just about 6,000 fish. This slide shows by week, so for October and November, the weekly schedule as planned pre-season for purse seine and gillnet. We're focusing on purse seine because these data are the ones, as you remember, that are plugged into the model to predict run size. We have had a shift in the schedule in 2014 and 15 in particular. And that shift is we used to have 2 days of purse seine fishing in week 44. This is the last week of October. It's really a peak time. The fish are bright, they're high value, and they're surging in. Because of co-manager negotiations at North of Falcon, in the last 2 years, we've distributed that second day of fishing up into week 42. So that's the earlier part of the run, and the catch rates are not going to be as high. Staff have determined that this could be biasing low the in-season model based updates of run size because we've got week 42 with lower catches in general and then the 1 day in week 43, one in week 44, as opposed to the 2 days in week 44. So with this shift, we've seen perhaps some issues with the alignment of the schedule and the strength of the model and its performance.
Mr. Chairman? Yes. Yeah, I hate to interrupt, but I think it would be, you said you did note that we've shifted the schedule, and maybe could you just comment as to why we shifted the schedule? Instead of having those two purse seine days in week 44, what was the, I think it would be, of course I know, but I think it would be good for other commissioners to know.
Sure.
Why
so
we made that change?
In the North of Falcon process, as you know, we have pretty intense negotiation with the tribes. The Hood Canal tribes and the state work closely together. I think we had like 8 meetings last year in which we talked about this fishery and a number of other issues. And in the complex negotiation landscape, to be able to get agreement and attempt to achieve our share within conservation guidelines, we did have to ultimately try for this week 42 one day and then reduce to the 1 day in week 44. So basically pressure from the co-managers.
Yeah, and their objection was that that 2 days in week 44 somehow impacted their ability to access fish, right?
That correct.
Okay.
Yeah.
And if I may add to that, there's also some additional modifications to our fishery in terms of closure to provide additional access without having the purse seine fleet in there for exclusive access to the area around Hood Canal Bridge for the tribes and some other smaller closure areas. So there has been some of those things that we've implemented that have gone hand in hand to some extent with this change in the schedule.
Yeah. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
So where do we go from here? We would like to keep moving forward and improving our process. To that end, we have been, even after this recent 2015 season, working with the Hood Canal tribes to think of ways to improve our in-season run size update process. We'd like to collaborate with them further and get technical staffs together to figure out methods perhaps to use that sex ratio data or other in-season observations in addition to the purse seine cumulative catch per unit effort-based model. And try with our negotiation and getting the schedule for the purse seine and gillnet fleet to align better with the assumptions of the current model. We'd also like to open it up to Commissioner and public input on how best to move forward. This tool that was agreed to in 2012 has provided security and comfort because we agree pre-season in the spring and then implement it in the fall, and everyone knows on the calls, the co-managers, what model we'll be using and what the terms are. And with that, we'd like to open it up to any questions.
Commissioners, questions?
Well, thanks for the presentation, and thank you, commissioners, for indulging me with this. I mean, this is a very important issue, and one that, you know, I've, along with staff, they do a great job, and I think it's good too that the new director gets a flavor of this fishery. This is a very valuable fishery for the non-Indian fleet, not only Purseine but gillnet as well. And it's as you can see, it's very well managed. It's a very clean fishery. We're meeting our escapement goals on natural fish, yet targeting these hatchery fish. The productivity has been very good in the last few years. Hopefully it maintains itself, and so we must be doing something right. But I think the frustration has been and has been we've deviated something that works very well to accommodate some tribal requests that we deviate from our pattern, but fishing pattern. But we've seen that it's really compromised our ability to come up with an in-season run size update in a timely fashion so that we can access the fish. So this will certainly be part of the North Falcon process, and I will be there and along with staff. And any event, this is a great presentation. Appreciate all the work that you guys do on this, and that's not a question but a comment.
So. Thank you, Commissioner Kehoe.
Yes.
Bob, were you going to ask a question with regard to hatchery production?
About the
I
won't maybe ask a question but a comment. Purseine vessel owners, along with the tribes and processors, have funded this Mercurnian hatchery, which you saw previously, which contributes just about, I don't know, just less than half of the hatchery production. I think that's it's been a good relationship with the state. We did this when the state was really in a financial bind, and the agencies took a huge cut. We just couldn't leave Mercurnian going fallow because, I mean, this is a huge part of the production. So we did step up and have worked with the department. It's worked fairly well. We're looking for the state to kind of resume it. At least from our perspective, it wasn't a permanent solution. It was a temporary one to kind of get us back to a point in time when the state had the ability to fund the hatchery, and hopefully we're there at this point. But thank you for that opportunity, Commissioner Mankin.
I have one other question.
Yeah.
If you broke this out on a percentage basis, what percentage of the hatchery production is WDF&W responsible for?
It's based on this, it comes down to about 25 million of the 28 million. So it's the lion's share. By all means, most of it's all produced in the southern half of the canal, from Hoodsport down. Obviously, that's our more northern facility. Those fish are terminally oriented, available for an extended period of time to the tribal fleet fishing within the Hoodsport area.
Our fleet does tend to fish more through the medial portion of Hood Canal on what tends to be those brighter fish, which leads to that higher productivity. In looking at the last couple of years, as far as the adult return, based on a preseason breakout, hatchery production is contributing about three-quarters of the return, somewhere around 67 to 75% of the return. And in 2015, we showed the value of the ex-vessel value to the purseine fishery, and it actually, that $1.5 million is somewhat low in the recent year, or on the low side in recent years. And we, in 2013, with the big return, we actually exceeded $3 million ex-vessel value. And so the multiplier on that is pretty significant to particularly the economy in Hood Canal, Puget Sound. So that hatchery production is a key element in that, and we certainly appreciate the partnership as well.
Mr. Thornburg.
My question actually may be to my fellow commissioner, Kehoe. The change in the season that the tribe has requested, does that impact sort of the business practice of the person? I mean, is it harder for them to have to go out in several weeks? And
very good question. Yes. I think, you know, these when you're only fishing one day a week, it's tougher to get people to get a crew than if you're fishing, say, 2 days a week, at least for that one week. So, yeah, I mean, it does affect. The idea would be to kind of, in a perfect world, it would be good to have more fishing days during the week so that people can, it's worthwhile for people to leave their jobs and go crew. So, yeah, good question, Commissioner.
Mr. Carpenter.
Yes, I should ask Bob. What,
Bob, you want to move up?
When you say a day of fishing, Bob, are you talking about a 24-hour day of fishing or an 8-hour day of fishing? Just for my own.
No, yeah, these are this time of year is a 10-hour opening or a 12-hour?
12 hours.
12 hours, yeah. So not.
Yeah. Or less.
Oh, 10 hours, yeah. 10-hour opening, so not a 24-hour opening.
Well, a couple
and the
days.
Same for the gillnets, they're fishing during the day as well, and I don't know what their hours are. If it's 10 hours, too. So, but anyway. Okay.
The second part of my question is, having heard some of this, what would you two managers think we could do to make this system work better?
Well, Lori mentioned part of the issue, what we see with the predictability, the certainty that the model provides for. The original model analysis was done where we operated a schedule that was much more similar to 2013, 2012. It was a week 42 was not open, so those data are fairly new when we add them into the model for the output. We had models that are based on week 43 and week 44 largely, some also on week 45. And as you add time into the season, you have more rigor in that model. As you look at just the 42, 43, 44, where our schedule historically was 0-1-2, that third week where you had 2 days provided for a fair bit of the stability and the rigor of that model. And so I think what we're seeing is with the recent 2 years of 1-1-1 schedule, we're seeing a little bit of variability being introduced into that. We think that and we've started to analyze what if you just took those latter 2 weeks of that three-week period and set aside the first week, not use that data, use the second week's 1 day, take the third week's 1 day and double it, and then apply it in the same fashion as you would have done historically in the data set, just as a kind of an assessment. And in a postseason context, compare that, because we only have one postseason year so far under our belt, 2014. It'll be pretty soon, we'll have 2015, so we can do the analysis for 2 years. But that'll give us some sort of comparability between the first 2 years of this newer model and the recent 2 years. And then we can get a feel for, is the 1-1-1 schedule reducing the predictability, the ability to actually hone in on that postseason run size. And so if it does, then I think we certainly have a strong leg to push to have you know, an argument for a 0-1-2 schedule. Similarly, if indeed, as those more recent years showed on the deviation from our ability to achieve our share, this shows that we're exceeding our share, right, for 2014 and 2015 by, on average, 10%, whereas the prior 2 years, 2013 and 2012, we really only fell short by a couple of percent. It may be in that 1-1-1 schedule that the postseason or that the actual run size by the ISU was higher, so we would have fished to a higher share. That's the one question that's still outstanding. Is that ISU undershooting? And so we'll have a better idea after we get our postseason information in from last year.
Yeah, I appreciate that explanation. That was well done. I having been around models here for too many years sometimes, I think that the credibility of the model is critically important. Mm-hmm. Because once you start to lose that credibility, your ability to manage deteriorates rapidly.
Yeah, that's an advantage to having very consistent fisheries of substantive magnitude where we have in the Persane fleet that data is long-term, fairly solid, fairly consistent. It's almost as good as having a dam.
Please don't bring that up.
any further? I think we'll continue working with our co-managers in the Hood Canal region to improve our modeling capabilities, and we'll have these arguments as far as pushback in north of Falcon. We start out each year trying to get those 2 days in week 44 for non-treaty Persane fleet, and we'll do that again this year. So.
Any other questions? Seeing none, well, thank you, Lori. Kurt,
very good.
Appreciate
you.
That.
Thank
yes.
Very
much.
Thank you.
Go ahead and take the rest of the day off.
We do have three individuals that wish to give comment or input. And for those of you that don't know the policy, you 3 minutes, and then you'll hear a beeper go off. You can finish your train of thought, but wind it up at that point, please. I'll call you up, too, and then the last one, Brian Beckman and Dave Sorensen, please. Brian, you have the floor.
Thank you. I'm Brian Bankman. I'm a Persaner here in Puget Sound. I also fish in Alaska. I live in Seattle. And my point, I guess, originally was to explain to you how important the Hood Canal fishery is to me. I'm on the PSVOA board with Bob there as our executive director, so I know Bob pretty well. You know, I have 5 crew in Puget Sound, 4 in Alaska. It's a significant part of my fishery. And my frustration the last 2 years with this new schedule, one of the points that wasn't made on this, it showed us being over our share in 2015. But well, I haven't seen the numbers, but I understand the native share was quite high in 2015, and that kind of went under the table here in this conversation, that I'm hearing a number of 133,000. Bob, do you know if there's any credence to that number?
Over the agreed run size?
Yes.
I would defer to staff on that.
Okay, well, that's close to what it was. So we didn't accomplish anything near our 50%. And a lot of that has to do with that new schedule that we have, that we didn't get to fish in the peak, and all those fish go down into the South Sound or the South Canal and get harvested at the hatchery, in front of the hatchery, by the native fishery. And so our perception as fishermen is that we're getting the real raw end of the deal here. And if we go back to that, I would want to encourage staff to push very, very hard to go back, skip week 42, get 1 day on 43 and 2 days on week 44, because that is the schedule we have fished. It's the schedule that provides good data, and it also seems to be much more fair in terms of us accomplishing our 50%. And that's really important to me, because that extra day, that extra if we had done that this year, the run size estimate would have been higher. We probably would have gotten another day in the next week, and that extra day would have more balanced the total harvest between the native and non-native fishery. And it's a significant difference between 3 days and or 2 days that we ended up with, and we got a third day later on. No, we had 3 days. So we would have had a fourth day with significant fishery instead of the one that was in week 47 or whenever it was that I went. Day was there. We caught nothing. We paid for our fuel. It was kind of pointless, although you never know. But anyway, that's my point, and that's what I wanted to
thank you, Brian.
Stress.
Thank you. Questions? Okay. Steve Peterson, please. And David.
Thank you. David Sorensen. I'm a purse seiner, same as Brian. I have five people here in the Sound and five up in Alaska. I wanted to, you know, I mean, if they're our Washington Department of Fish and Wildlife is going to use statistical week 43 and only give us 1 day during that time and then double it, I mean, why not just let us go out and fish it and show them what we actually caught during that time? And Kim, you had said something about the viability of this and going out 1 day. It is hard to get people to, you know, to drop what they're doing and come for 1 day and make this adventure. I mean, it's very difficult to get crew nowadays. And we the last couple of years of losing that extra day in week 43 has been very significant for our overall bottom line. I don't know. It's frustrating to see us not getting our share of it, and just wanted to be here and show that I was supporting this and do whatever I can to encourage more time for us. But I don't need to wait for the ding.
Thank you, David. Any questions?
I have a question.
Yes,
for staff. Hypothetically, if there would have been a second day in there that the gentleman talked about, where would the imbalance be? It was 130,000. So if these guys had a second day, where would that end up in your mind? Okay, thank you.
Thank you. Steve?
Steve Peterson, skipper of the Marinee. I've been fishing in Puget Sound since 1982 as a crew member, and then since 1989 as a skipper. And I just echo the same feelings, and I'm getting very discouraged with the scheduling and the management, if that's it just seems unfair and biased. I mean, we used to bank on the 2 days during the peak. Everyone knows that's the peak week. And it like doubled your gross stock, usually. If you missed them the first day, you're definitely going to get them the second day. Now it's spread out over the course of, you know, they schedule it for 8 days. You get three or four anymore. I don't know why so many are being taken care of or taken away. It's because it is messing it up. The averages and the model that it's following is diminishing our opportunity and not reflecting what's really going on. It's just off track, and I think it's being influenced by a biased group that knows the same thing I know, that that's where the meat of the season is, and they want them to get by so they can have at them. I mean, I would too, but I wouldn't do that. I mean, it's just not fair. And I want to state that clearly, that we're being treated unfairly and the model's not working. And it's not worth it, because pretty soon you're getting skeleton crews that are endangering us, and it's too expensive an operation to have that situation. It's not even worth starting your engines for this year, last year, the previous year. Our 2013 was darn good, so I take that back. And I think we need to do our homework and look at this a lot closer, because the feelings are not shared with Bob. It's not being handled real well. We're all pretty discouraged, to say the least. But that's what I'm here for. Put it on the line. Let you guys know. I love fishing, and it's not fun when you aren't even able to pay your crew much. It takes all the fun out of it and the profitability, and it doesn't make sense anymore. But there's fish there. We just aren't allowed to get to them. And there's plenty of fish. I can prove it. Let me go. Fish. Anyways, thank you.
Thank you, sir. Questions? Well, thank you all, gentlemen. You've made your points very eloquently and very, very clear. So, and I'm sure Mr. Keough is all ears, too, as all of us are. That brings to a conclusion number 8, and now we will be moving into the executive session. And I'm just going to read you something. Then we'll take a break before the executive session. But pursuant to RCW 4230.110.1I, to discuss with legal counsel representing the agency matters relating to agency enforcement actions, or to discuss legal counsel representing the agency litigation or potential litigation to which the agency, the governing body, or a member acting in an official capacity is or likely to become a party, when public knowledge regarding the discussion is likely to result in an adverse legal or financial consequence to the agency. No action will be taken in executive session, and the public is not permitted to listen to the executive session. So we will take a